Chapter 28. Ryder and Jeff wouldn't let go of each other's hands. They sat in the first row of back seats, which had been turned around to face the front. They fell asleep, or at least Jonathan thought they did, and the fear of awakening them kept everyone else from saying anything. Ryder had allowed Gale to put antibiotic cream on his cuts and tape them with gauze. They didn't say much, and Jonathan didn't ask any questions. He had no idea what they'd been through, and he knew just enough about psychology to know that an improperly asked question could do more harm than good. Plus, he really didn't want to hear their answers. Jonathan was keenly aware that the last time the boys were in a vehicle on their way to shelter, they'd witnessed two murders, and then their nightmare had begun. There was no way to avoid the déjà vu element here. He hoped they'd simply stay asleep and make the drive go faster. It was no longer possible for Ryder and Jeff to be taken to Resurrection House. The kids knew too much about the team's identities. They didn't know names, but they'd seen faces, and Fisherman's Cove was too small a town to guarantee that they would not cross paths.
"Where are you taking us?"
Ryder asked at a whisper.
"I'm not asleep,"
Jeff said.
"Okay, where are we going?"
Louder this time. Jonathan left the talking to Gale.
"To a place called Shenandoah Station," she said. "You've been there before."
"The Ballantines?" the boy asked. "We didn't like it there."
"No, not the Ballantines."
"Jesus," Jonathan thought. "If these kids ever figure out the body count associated with their adventure, they'll never be right in the head."
Gale said,
"You weren't at this place very long. It's where you were last. Right before, well, right before."
"Where the priest came?"
"Exactly."
"Hey, are they okay?"
Jonathan felt the air get heavier, thicker.
"No, sweetie," Gale said. "He died. The driver, too, I'm afraid."
"Were Officer Al and Officer Kim really cops?"
Jeff asked.
"No, they weren't."
A beat.
"I'm glad you killed them,"
Jeff said. Ryder added,
"I wish I'd have been able to do it."
Yeah, there was some serious shrink time in their future. It was after 2 when the Batmobile pulled up to the front door of Shenandoah Station. Soren Lightwater was on the front porch waiting for them. An electric space heater glowed at her feet, and she held a heavy wool blanket around her as she moved back and forth in the porch swing. She stood as the Suburban pulled to a stop.
"Everybody wait here," Jonathan said,
and he stepped out into the cold.
"A priest called me,"
Soren said as she approached. She offered her hand. He took it.
"Thank you for agreeing to take the boys," he said.
"It's what we do. I'm glad you found them."
Jonathan shifted and cleared his throat.
"Listen, about the other day."
She silenced him with a raised hand.
"Don't," she said. "You were only partially wrong. Bobby Z no longer works here. Shenandoah Station will no longer be a stop of the cartel railroad. I can't believe that happened."
"And as far as I'm concerned, it never did," Jonathan said. "All of that ends here, tonight, with this conversation."
Soren looked doubtful.
"Why do I sense there's more?"
Jonathan smiled.
"It must be late," he said. "My poker face isn't working for me."
She waited for the rest.
"I'll give it to you straight. The long and short of it is, not only did your drug transgressions never happen, my team and I were never here.
I don't understand.
He chuckled.
I bet you don't. It's better if you don't try.
How am I going to explain the arrival of two brothers?
You'll be hearing from some folks in the morning who will share all the details. Trust me, there will be no trouble to you for any of this.
Soren's deep scowl lines stood out in high relief in the wash of the headlights.
You're not really with the FBI, are you?
Jonathan danced his eyebrows.
Thank you again, he said.
Without turning away from Soren, he waved at the Batmobile. It was time to transfer the children.
They've been through a lot, he said. Way, way more than most adults could handle. Keep that in mind.
He heard the Suburban's door open and feet hit the ground.
How do you want to be introduced?
He whispered.
I'll take care of that, she said.
Her face blossomed into a bright smile.
You must be Ryder and Jeffrey, she said. I've heard so much about you. I missed you when you were here last time.
The boys looked dead on their feet, the dictionary definition of exhausted. Soren stooped to their eye level.
Oh, you poor things. Let's get you inside and warm you up.
Soren stood and, in what appeared to be a well-practiced maneuver, eased the boys away from Gale and past Jonathan without looking and without a word. She never glanced back, and neither did the boys, as she escorted them up the three steps across the porch and through the front door.
Wow, Jonathan said. That was fast. Probably best for all.
When he looked at Gale, he was not surprised to see tears balanced on her lids. He reached out, and she took his hand.
A hug from them would have been nice, she said.
That seemed to go well,
Boxer said as Jonathan and Gale climbed back into the Suburban and took their seats.
They've been through too much, Gale said.
At least they're alive to recover, Jonathan said.
Boxers maneuvered the Batmobile onto the road, and they were on their way.
Hey, guys, Dawkins said. I've been going through these documents you took from the Kadyrov's cabin. I didn't think it was appropriate to talk while the boys were here. Do you have any idea what you got?
Just a glance, Jonathan said.
These are subway schedules for the Washington Metro system.
Originally started in the late 1970s, Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority's subway system ferried hundreds of thousands of commuters every morning and afternoon to, from, and through the city and its suburbs in Virginia and Maryland.
I think we found their target.
That's a big system, Jonathan said.
Must be close to 100 stations. Anything in the stack of papers to indicate which one?
Not that I've been able to find.
What about a timeline?
Boxers asked.
No.
Dawkins shuffled through the pages. At least, not yet. There are some handwritten notes in the margins, but I can't read the language they're written in. I guess my Chechen isn't all that it used to be.
You speak Chechen?
Jonathan asked.
I was being ironical.
We need to read Wolverine into this,
Boxer said.
She's got about 35,000 sets of eyes she can bring to the mix.
And tell her what? Gale challenged. That we think documents we seized illegally during a break-in might show that an attack might be coming at an unknown time to one of 100 subway stations? What's she supposed to do with that?
How about your outfit?
Jonathan asked Dawkins.
What, the DEA?
Dawkins sounded horrified.
Not in this lifetime. I wouldn't do well in prison.
We don't have anything to give any agency, Dig, Gale said. There's no meat on the bones.
So what do you suggest?
Big Guy asked.
Other than staying off the metro system for a while.
Jonathan thought it through. it no longer made sense to head back to Fisherman's Cove, exhaustion notwithstanding.
"Head into the district," he said. "We'll crash for the night."
"The morning commute in D.C. starts at 5 a.m., Dawkins said.
"If they hit at 5, then we miss it," Jonathan said. "There are limits on top of our limits here. I'm not going to go off half-cocked and get all of us hurt."
"What can we even do?" Gale asked. "I mean, as a practical matter, I'm assuming that disarming a chemical weapons bomb is outside of even your expertise."
Outside of his expertise was a polite way of expressing the truth of it, which was that he had no earthly clue. Gale continued,
"And we can't walk around the city in Level A suits."
"Isn't it obvious?" Big Guy said. "We have to stop them before they plant their devices. Stopping people is definitely in our wheelhouse."
"I've got to wake up Mother Hen," Jonathan said. "She's got to flog the shit out of her facial recognition toys. If she can find them, at least we can have a shot at a step two."
"But how?" Dawkins asked.
"Say it's 100 stations, 4 of us. Even if we can locate them, they're not going to stick around and be caught. How do we not be too late?"
"Whatever we try will be a long shot," Boxer said. "But we can narrow things down. For example, I think it's a high probability guess that they'll want to target rush hour, right?"
Jonathan had no problem with the logic. Big Guy continued,
"So, building on that logic, it makes sense that they'd want the largest number of victims."
"As terrorists so often do," Gale said.
"Exactly. So we can write off any of the suburban stations. At any given moment, the highest concentrations of people are going to be inside the city, not outside of it."
Jonathan took his phone out of his pocket and pulled up the map of the metro system. It was the same map that was posted in every car on every train. Some said the map, with its graphic display of the various train lines, red, green, orange, blue, yellow, and silver, looked like a crippled spider. To Jonathan, it looked like someone dropped colorful spaghetti.
"We're spitballing here, so we'll stipulate that the highest concentration of people is key. So the stations where you can transfer from one line to the next would make the most sense, agreed?"
"Sure,"
Gale said.
"Right," Jonathan said. "And we'll also stipulate that Virginia and Maryland are out. That leaves transfer stations within the city itself."
"That's pretty much every stop," Dawkins said. "Orange, blue, and silver all run on the same tracks, and so do green and yellow." By now, Gale had produced her phone as well.
"Don't discount the tourists," she said. "In fact, I think tourists are the key, so long as we're taking wild guesses. You talk about the 5 a.m. commute, but none of the D.C. attractions are open at that time. The tourists are all in bed. I think we're looking at the afternoon commute. Most people will be commuting home, and the museums will have just closed."
"I think you're right," Dawkins said. "It's been a while since I did that god-awful commute, but the afternoons do tend to be worse than the mornings, so long as the trains don't break down, as if that doesn't happen every day."
"All right," Boxer said. "It's my turn to guess wild-acidly. Look for the transfer stations that have the most available lines and are near something worth looking at. Fort Totten won't be ground zero."
"Okay, big guy," Jonathan said. "You're the one who lives downtown. Where would you plant the device for maximum effect?"
Boxers chuckled.
"Is this me as a terrorist or me as me? Personally, I'd like to nuke both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue and get a fresh start."
Jonathan let the moment pass.
"There's really only 3 options," Gale said. "Metro Center, Gallery Place, or L'Enfant Plaza."
"Unless there's a convention in town, it won't be Gallery Place," Boxer said. "You have the maps. L'Enfant Plaza has all 5 lines, right?"
"Correct,"
Jonathan said. And it's in the middle of the most tourist shit, Boxer said. That's our station.
Just like that? Dawkins said. Declare it to be so, and it is?
Welcome to the private sector, Special Agent Dawkins, Jonathan said. We're flying without a net here, and we're doing it without authorization from anyone. If we miss, we miss. It's happened before, and it undoubtedly will happen again.
We'll revisit all of this, Gale said, and we'll get Mother Hen to work some of her magic, but we have a place to start.
And the plan will be?
Dawkins pressed.
To stop them, Jonathan said.
Who's to say they'll stay together?
Boxers asked.
There are two of them.
There are at least two of them,
Gale added.
Jonathan smiled.
Words cannot express how proud I am that my team of crack operators, the ultimate professionals, can count accurately all the way to two.
He switched away from the internet and opened the telephone app.
Venice is not going to like being woke up at this hour,
Boxer said.
Ah, she won't mind, Jonathan said, as if saying it could make it true.